Do you field dress them before you drag them out, or you drag them out and then field dress them?
I am no expert in that regard.
Okay. And what is field dressing exactly? Is that like a, not like a dressing, is it?
I think it's when you wear something flowing in the prairie.
Oh, you dress and then you drag them out? It's a whole process. That's why I don't hunt. Oh. Well, only six people managed to sign up for the first day of Obamacare, but they got coverage up the wazoo. I mean, yeah, eyeglasses, dental, psychiatric, feet, ankles, shin, homeopathic, Zumba, Christian Science. What a deal for those six. Well, what do you know? Okay, then.
Live from Tempe, Arizona to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, Local Souls author Alan Gerganis, all the news that isn't, and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who hopes to get the mask off his head by Thanksgiving, it's Michael Feldman.
What mask? This is not the man. Why would you say that? Oh, yeah, I get a lot of that, you know, take off the Groucho mask already. I'm so tired of that. It's not a mask. Well, anyhow, the moral of the Obamacare story is don't mess with any industry like insurance that can ordain acts of God. You know, you're not going to compete with, they can tell you if it's an act of God or not. So, looking on the good side, at least he didn't mess with our homeowners. You know? Nobody messes with my homeowners. I don't care. President Obama, damned if you don't, damned if you don't. Isn't that the way it goes? Presidents ought to do second term first and get out of the way, is what my feeling about this. In other news that isn't, a trailer-sized asteroid passing between Earth and Moon. What's the hitch?
Aww.
Trailer size. Should put the hitch closer to the trailer, I guess. Okay, never mind. Sorry I mentioned it. The NSA says it will only collect your data if you're a passerby of a third cousin of a person of interest. So, it's very unlikely. Well, the NSA and NRA merge. That's ball game. Turns out much of the intel collected from the French is irregular verbs. Say futile. The Merkel tap was a big mistake. Actually, they meant to tap Urkel. So that was just a big mistake. Ironically, the NSA tapped everybody but Snowden, so that's a little oversight there. They could have used a little oversight. As a consolation prize, the St. Louis Cardinals get Conrad Murray as team doctor. Okay, you're loving it. Loving it. They're loving it. They're loving it. A new frog species found in Queensland makes love while singing Hello, My Baby. A bra that tweets gets a huge number of followers. Huge. Google Glass 2 comes with nose and eyebrows. The court rules that I Heart Boobies bracelets are protected speech if you're not a 47-year-old man. Saudi Arabian women may now do backseat driving from the front, so that's some progress. Due to bacterial concerns, the rule of thumb is on mother's milk is know the breast. If you know the breast, that's the rule of thumb. Thank you. Jonas Brothers broken up by the Ono sisters. Leaker Edward Snowden, there he is again, gets a job selling Oakley thermonuclear sunglasses in a Moscow mall. Okay, tepid. Note, tepid. President Obama reportedly considered dropping Biden for Hillary and Michelle for Beyonce. And finally, and I mean that new airline rules mean flight attendants will have the discretion over whether vibrators are electronic devices. Okay, that's all the news. That isn't. It's not news, so it isn't. Oh, thank you very much for your indulgence. Okay. Alan Gerganis has a new one out, much long-awaited, actually. It's been a while. Local Souls, it's called. Of course, author of The Oldest Living Confederate Widow Tells All. We're back here now in Falls, North Carolina, among the fallen. And Alan is with us somewhere near Chapel Hill. How near Chapel Hill are you, Alan?
I'm about 11 miles away in a little village of 6,000 souls.
Are you?
And I'm watching the neighbors at all times.
Yeah.
It's an endless source of entertainment and consolation, I think.
Yeah. Is that Tarboro or around there? Or?
It's called Hillsboro.
Hillsboro.
Okay. That's right.
Is that actually Falls? It's real?
No, there is no actual Falls. No. My lawyers told me to say that. I started out in a town called Rocky Mount, and I've moved to a town called Hillsboro.
Yeah.
But in fact, the more you make up a town, the richer it gets. And from book to book since 1989, I now have a Google map of the entire superstructure of the town in my head. So
yeah.
It's very comforting, actually.
Yeah, and they did put a little map in there in the book, there, in the fly leaf there, which
That's
is
That's right. Yeah, I drew a map of the three busy city blocks where drownings and adulteries are happening almost constantly.
Some simultaneously, too.
That's right, absolutely.
Yeah. Among the fallen.
That's right.
So you actually feel like you live there now, right?
It's true, yeah. The town had to decide what to call itself, given that its name is Falls. And instead of calling themselves the Fallsites, which sounds like a form of coal, or sounds like falsies, which is not dignified,
no.
The group had too many drinks and decided to call themselves the Fallen. And that plays into my Christian boyhood and John Milton's Paradise Lost, so it made perfect sense to me at the time.
The Fallen.
That's right.
And, for church, country club, and frontage, right?
That's right, yeah. Exactly. It's all hanging together somehow.
Yeah, and the frontage maybe should come first, I guess.
That's right.
You had frontage at one time, anyhow. Frontage was a thing to have.
Exactly, that's right.
I love the story, the decoy.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's at my hometown, now I'm going to counteract what I just said about imagination.
Yeah.
Was flooded in 1999 in a hurricane called Floyd.
And Floyd, yeah.
I had the unbelievable experience of going in by boat to my hometown, and suddenly this little tobacco town had become Venice, and all the streets that I knew were 12 feet underwater, and all the houses where I'd smoked my first cigarette and filled up my first boy or girl were underwater monuments and never to be recovered again.
Yeah.
It really was like an apocalyptic vision visited on the sweetest little entity that you could imagine. And it was inspiring, fictionally at least.
Yeah. And this is sort of an apocalyptic story, isn't it?
It is. It's very dark. I mean, in a way, I think it's both comic and horrific at the same time, to the same degree. I've said elsewhere that I want to write the funniest books possible about the worst things that can happen to people. And if you've got that, you've got a perpetual motion machine, because we're all slightly doomed by being mortal, but we're all looking to have as much fun as possible every day. And those two double forces, I think, can produce something very, very beautiful and very true.
Yeah. At one point, didn't you subscribe to the theory that Americans love a tragedy that ends happily?
That's right. Yeah, that was Edith Wharton's line.
Yeah.
What Americans most want is a tragedy with a happy ending.
Yeah.
And if you can concoct that fictionally, I think you've done something kind of magical that has a kind of truth in it. It seems the contradiction, but I think that's what we all long for.
But you kind of reversed it here, because you had a happy, somewhat idyllic beginning that ends in tragedy.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, there's a kind of reversal. I'm very interested in the ones that stayed at home.
Yeah.
I think a lot of American fiction, a lot of fiction generally, is about the people with enough equipment to climb Mount Everest. If I were writing that story, I would tell it from the Sherpa's point of view. I'm a real Democrat with the lower and upper case D, and I feel that I left home when I was 18 to go north to school, and only 22 years ago did I come back to North Carolina, and I realized that some of the wittiest people in the world are the ones who stayed put. They inherited the Budweiser dealership, which made just enough profit to keep them in the little town.
Yeah.
And I sort of condescended to them from afar, but as soon as I got back, I realized that they were reading the same newspapers that I was, and they had had a kind of wise vision of the world. They had stayed home. They'd taken care of Mama. They're the ones that tried to save the family farm. They're the ones waiting in line at the schoolhouse to do the daily carpooling. And I realized there was a kind of true heroics in that vision. And so I've sort of dedicated my work to writing about middle-class people in the middle of middle-life crises, but who are holding the line. And I think there's too little work about those folks.
Yeah. But if you stayed, wouldn't you be in Gerganus auto sales?
I would probably be in jail.
Oh.
You know, somehow you look back and you just think, if my father hit me one more time, I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah.
Or if I'd had to go to choir practice one more time, I needed to get out in order to come back successfully. And I think that's, in a way, what fiction can do. I feel like I spent the first half of my life leaving home and the second half coming back.
Yeah. And, of course, here we have the Mabrys. We have the peanut Mabrys and the sweet potato Mabrys and...
That's right. Every county has families that are famous for some single crop. And this particular family is divided between whether you think the most aristocratic products are the peanuts or the sweet potatoes, and they each have a strong vision of that. But I'm fascinated as the son and great-grandson of tobacco farmers about how prestige accumulates in the county. And I think we've lost touch with that kind of agricultural past and actually the heroism of getting up every day and feeding the stock and doing your chores before the school bus stops.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating kind of Eden that I think we all participated in. It's extremely difficult. It's a hard way to live. But when you look back on it, it seems more and more lyrical and pure and perfect.
Oh. And here we have Red Mabry, the father, who aspires towards the River Road set.
Exactly. He has a breakdown when he's about 9 years old driving his father's broken-down truck and sees how rich people live for the first time and determines in that way that we have these Paul on the Road to Damascus revelations that he wants his family to belong to the golf club and to play tennis and to have the luxury of living on a river. We don't know early in the story that the river tends to flood, but he does get his wish through hook and crook. And I found it very beautiful and amazing how a single-minded wish for something can completely organize our lives and how fervently we can make things happen if we concentrate on that single overriding wish and ambition.
Mm-hmm. And his son doesn't quite share that, though.
No, his son always feels like the farm boy with the club kids. And even though he's handsome and respectable, has an insurance business, and is genial all around, he always feels like a pretender, and he always feels like a visitor. And I think, in a way, all of us feel that. One of my realizations is that the most beautiful woman I've ever known told me she felt like a monster most of the time.
Hmm.
That when people stared at her, she felt they were seeing flaws, and they were actually just grazing on her beauty. And I think all of us, in a way, feel that we're malformed or second best goods. And fiction is one marvelous way of treating that with sympathy and a kind of forgiveness that I think is hard to come by in the world as we know it.
And Red's shortcomings are pretty much out in the open. I mean,
he's kind of a beautiful fool. He goes to the local French restaurants and orders snails, but he makes his son eat them. He says, "For your education," and he watches with horror as his kid swallows pencil erasers, you know, drenched in butter.
But it's a learning experience.
It's a learning experience, that's right. And part of the beauty of being a fiction writer is that it lets you see your childhood reality with a new kind of freshness by introducing this really poor farmer to the country club reality. I make it sort of a Martian vision of folk customs that are practiced in mid-century America, and it opens me up to a kind of wonder at a kind of possibility of redistributing justice, which is, I think, what novels and short stories can do for us. I think too often we think that the fix is in on who succeeds and who doesn't. And what's marvelous in creating characters is that you get to realign justice so that it comes out just a little better. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of insight, there's a kind of revelation that we don't have every day of our lives, but it's possible on the page.
Yeah, even if it's sometimes an ironic justice.
Yeah, it's never quite what we expect when we expect it.
Yeah, such the Doc Roper, who is like the town hero, the doctor who can cure everything. He can take something off you, cut it off you, and there's no scar.
That's right. Yeah, he's a kind of miraculous figure. And I think that every little town has a town doctor who is revered almost to the point of sainthood, sometimes to the detriment of other people, or a preacher. And it's a lonely role, being that figure that is exempt from other people's judgment. But Roper does have extraordinary powers. One of my favorite scenes is when he's jogging past a children's birthday party, and six-year-old twin boys have made a kind of diving bet and have drowned underwater in the River Lithium. Mm-hmm. And he pulls them ashore and breathes into them, and the whole community sobbing, standing around in their bathing suits, watch these kids come back to life. It's something that happens every day, but it's something that on the page can achieve kind of miraculous, almost biblical associations. And it certainly gives him a kind of power that he exercises as long as he can in this community.
Yeah, and yet he's always removed from he's strangely removed from all this, and a distant individual.
That's right. I think there are these people who allow others to project onto them. They don't give us too much information. Roper is tall and good-looking and was sixth in his class at the Yale Medical School, but he somehow returned to Falls, North Carolina, population 6,000, as if he knows that he's best off not blazing trails in terms of curing cancer, but in saving the lives and stitching up the eyebrows of his neighbors. And this gives him an amazing kind of power. But he understands, I think, that the power comes in part from doing what he does and not getting involved with other people's husbands and wives. He's a straight shooter in a way, and it allows other people to fall in love with him. Our hero has a terrible sort of heart problem, which gives him an extra reason to depend on Roper.
Yeah.
And it sets up in a kind of tension and a kind of beautiful misunderstanding between the two men.
Yeah. That scene where he says, "I've got you," his father has died.
Exactly.
They share a disease, actually. It's a cholesterol.
That's right. It's called familial cholesterolemia. Mm-hmm. It's a disease that I made up in fiction.
Oh.
It's passed from father to son, and it involves a body hoarding all the cholesterol it ever absorbs to the point that by the time you're 52, you're on the way to becoming a mineral. And I live next door to a distinguished cardiologist, now retired. Mm-hmm. I described this fictitious disease to him. It took me about 10 minutes to lay out all the symptoms. And I said, "Is such a thing possible?" He said, "You mean aside from familial cholesterolemia?" And I had intuited in this weird way that fiction sometimes does a condition that's very, very specific and very well known in our heart circles. So it's fascinating. I mean, I feel I'm the luckiest man in the world in terms of having a job that lets me sort of dream while conscious.
Yeah.
And sometimes hit on these freshets of information that I could never have anticipated.
So you invented this disease that actually exists?
I did, and I'm so glad I don't have it, Michael, I tell you. There's not enough Lipitor in the world to get rid of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's rather amazing.
It happens more often than not. My teacher was John Cheever, a wonderful American writer.
Oh, fantastic.
And he said, fiction is a force of memory imperfectly understood.
Right.
So instead of making things up, we're really like archaeologists uncovering things. We're like, Indiana Jones in the cave looking at a mosaic on the floor and finding all the encoded information that seems to anticipate a civilization we never knew existed before.
Yeah. But this is a lot to digest here. I have to stop and think about some of this stuff before I ask my next question.
Yeah, good. Well, we've got the rest of the weekend to do it, I guess.
But, and you have Southern culture on your side, though, right?
I do. It's a huge advantage.
Yeah.
I mean, we grew up with caring immensely about the Bible, about land as power. We grew up in a zone which was 60% African-American, which lends a kind of beautiful richness to our white culture and makes for something brand new. And the climate also encourages people to sit on porches in the summer and just exercise their jaw muscles and nothing else in the heat.
Right.
And so it makes for an extraordinary storytelling capacity. And everybody has to tell stories. There are people in little towns who are famous as storytellers and who sit around service stations, and people come and buy them Cokes and crackers if they'll tell the story about X and Y and the day the pigs got loose. It still happens. There's a kind of hip parade in small towns.
Yeah, it still does. And it's funny because the young Bill in this is not one of those who can do that. His father certainly is. His father can tell a story, but young Bill is not a storyteller. He's totally quiet for the most
part. Exactly. I think this is a classic case of people entering the middle class. There's a kind of restraint. We feel in a way that being middle class is like putting on a serious army-built girdle or something that limits us in terms of our material, whereas the father, who's a farm boy through and through, is always talking in bawdy terms about farm animals and farmers' daughters, who feels completely at home in the material world in the way that his self-conscious country club son is impeded and somewhat constrained around other people.
Yeah.
So it's a classic kind of class advancement with all sorts of limitations. And I think the second, third generation in town is much more naturalized and much more at ease in the world.
Yeah. And the other sense you get in the South, I mean, it's almost like England in a way, because they have people who go back to 1610, their land goes back to 1610, and they have all these artifacts that they all lost, of course, in the flood and everything. But it really is a different sort of class system than you find.
It is. It's a very ancient form of antiquity and royal lineage, you know, back to the Lord Proprietors. I mean, it's amazing that I know people whose umpty-umps great-grandparents received hundreds of thousands of acres from the King of England who'd never set foot in America. Of course, these hundreds of thousands of acres actually belonged to the Cherokee and the Tuscarora, but that didn't bother him in terms of leasing agreements. But it makes for a kind of richness of legacy. And even though the money has long been gone, there's still this sense of the aristocracy. Some people think that the Southern accent came from working-class black and poor white people imitating the French that was spoken in the early homes, that a Southern accent is a English-speaking person slowing down his speech in such a way as to imitate court French that was spoken in the most aristocratic houses.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Now, I can think about that now, too, for a while. But I'm just going to asterisk this.
That's right. That and the heat, I think.
Come back to the speech part. That's really quite amazing. And it's funny because in the story, in Decoy, Red sort of enters that through a bequest from one of these old landowners. He doesn't really enter the class, but he gets to sample it. He gets a country club heritage membership from this homeowner that he's helped out with his roof.
That's right. Yeah, the direct heir to the Lord Proprietor gives $65,000 to Red in the 1950s, which is a fortune. And it's that money that allows him to move into this grand house, or this house that he imagines is grand enough to name, even though it was built in 1930. And he adopts, in a comic way, the mores of the aristocrats that he seeks to emulate and that he hopes to bring his son into relation with. But I think it's a classic case. It's like Prince William marrying Kate Middleton. when the line is thinning out, and let's face it, with the English royalty, it's getting pretty thin up there. You need a good-looking middle-class girl to bring some major mojo, some animal energy into the line. Yeah. And I think that that can happen in little towns, too. Sometimes the new money, the pretenders, turn out to have a kind of energy and a kind of enthusiasm and a kind of good forward-moving faith that the older families have lost. There's a great line from William Carlos Williams that says, "She was from an old family, old and rotten." And I think that we're always trading up in America, and sometimes it really works to our advantage.
Yeah, sometimes not.
Yeah, that's true.
And everybody's funny, too. That's the other thing you got to admire. Is this actually true in the South where everyone can make a funny twist on things?
And yeah, even people who are not inherently funny out of sheer self-protection have learned two or three jokes that they use over and over again.
Yeah. But even just puns in speech and nicknames for people.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah, exaggeration is the way to go. Always to push it just three or four notches up a grade.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Twain essentially made his fortune by exaggerating. And it's, you know, to call golf a good walk ruined is marvelous.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of succinct phraseology that he specialized in and that seems to be a earmark of Southern speech.
Yeah. I just copied down one here in the margins here. Live 18 holes away from clubhouse handsome.
That's right.
Kind of like that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's taking existing maps and slightly rerouting them and making them live all over again.
Yeah, and the nicknames, I mean, the wrong nickname could kill you early on, couldn't it?
That's right. No, and I was born in 47, but I grew up with people named Gimp and Fatty, you know. It's horrible to think that we called somebody Fatty because he had 20 extra pounds around his middle. But that was sort of the cruel facts of the case that you just accepted at the time. I don't think it would be possible these days.
Yeah, and you can't appeal those nicknames. No,
there's no court of appeals to be called Sandy or Beauty or something like that. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and at one point in the story, Bill hears people talking about his dad. He doesn't know that he's there, and they refer to him as Yosemite Sam or something.
Yeah, that's right. He's short and bow-legged and red-haired and irascible, so they naturally go to the nearest cartoon.
Yeah. And, of course, the decoy thing is the doctor begins carving. He quits his practice after all these years, much to the chagrin of everyone, because they truly feel that he has their lives in their hands. And he seems to abandon them. And most of them resent it, especially young Bill, I think, who identifies with him.
That's right. Yeah, you somehow, Scott Fitzgerald said, you know, there are no second acts in American life.
Right.
And since he died at 42, he never lived to see his second and 40th revival. But the doc makes a seamless transition from saving the lives of everybody in the community to becoming an internationally famous decoy carver and painter. And people in the community resent not only his fame at the age of 70, but abandoning them for carved chunks of wood that look like swimming ducks. And it somehow upsets the balance of power in the community when somebody who's a true lifesaver gives way to something that seems a hobby. But there are difficulties ahead for Doc and his beautiful carvings.
Yeah, money. And he won't even sell one to Bill, I guess. That's the ultimate.
Yeah, that's a tremendous kind of insult, I think, because Bill feels he has no pedigree in the town, but he has accumulated money. And so when he sees a masterpiece that he recognizes as looking like himself as a young stud, he wants it very, very much. And though he gives a blank check to Doc has already made arrangements to sell his masterpieces through galleries in New York, so he's bypassed the local.
Oh. Because he used to comb his hair in a DA.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. An Elvis backflip. It's really, really that kind of sideline haircut that we used to see. They were fantastic creations.
You didn't used to do that, did you? Really?
No, my daddy shaved my head so often that I didn't have much to work with.
Yeah, yeah. And did were you farmers, farm people?
My grandfather had been a farmer but had moved to town and then had what we call a hobby farm, which means just a nominal piece of acreage that he would visit to remember being a real farmer. But we had moved to town two generations before, and my father was a small-town businessman, owned some supermarkets, one on the white and one on the black side of town. So we had town credentials, but we had the fun of going out on the weekends to our grandfather's farm, which had about 50 head of hogs, and we would ride them like rodeo ponies. I think the hogs always stayed skinny because my grandfather never realized that his suburban grandkids were using them as pony rides during the weekend. But it was great fun. I feel extremely lucky to have fallen into history precisely when I did, Michael, because the 19th century was still in force in the 1950s. We had to visit my grandparents' house every Sunday afternoon. We had to eat dinner with them every Sunday. I had 23 first cousins who were very entertaining, and it was actually not as onerous as you would think. We made the best of it, but it was exactly a continuation of what had happened since the beginning of time, I guess. I guess Adam and Eve's grandchildren had to come and hang out with them on a Sunday afternoon. And that also ruptured in the 1960s when one country club uncle decided to play golf instead of coming to have dinner with his parents. And I saw my grandmother and my aunts retreat to the bedroom in tears, literally sobbing into handkerchiefs because something had ended. I thought it was extremely foolish. But I now realize that for my family and my town, the 19th century really ended about 1962. Mm-hmm. And it was that day when everything ruptured and everything changed.
Well, it's an amazing book, Local Souls, for the souls who stayed.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm very proud of it, Michael. Yeah. It's great to talk to you.
It's great to talk to you. Alan Gerganis, ladies and gentlemen, somewhere near Chapel Hill. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Michael. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Local Souls. Okay, and it's, why don't they put the, oh yeah, here it is. Liver Right. Not with a W, but with an R. Liver. Or Live Right. Or Liverite. I don't know. One of the two. But anyhow, that's probably, you'll find it. Gerganis, Local Souls. And you should read The Confederate Widow Tells All, too, if you haven't. That's such a great book.
Did you have any nicknames when you were a kid?
None I care to repeat at this point.
Okay.
Yeah. You?
Yeah, a couple.
Yeah. You don't want to say yours either, do you?
Well, the one I had in high school, which was okay, was Tools.
Tools is all right. That's cool. Yeah.
But I had one when I was much younger that...
Yeah. They call me Feminine instead of Feldman sometimes. Hey, Feminine. I can take a joke, but, you know, when you're 9 years old, 10 years old, it's a challenge to you. Feminine. What about you, Jeff? Did you have a nickname?
Hambone,
yeah.
Ham Slice.
Yeah. Which did you prefer, Hambone or Ham Slice?
Neither.
Neither? Okay. Usually not a good thing. I guess that's why they're nicknames. Yeah. What do you got for us here, a little tune?
This is a little tune, yeah. It's by Horace Silver, and it's called Whenever Lester Plays the Blues.
Once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Okay. By the way, didn't the rest of you get a census form? Jeff has been going on about this thing for weeks now, that he claims that he's being harassed by the census, U.S. Census, and it's not a census year. You know? So someone is asking him for personal information, right? Did you figure this out yet?
Well, Julie got one at work.
Julie got one at work.
And she sent
so they're harassing your entire family,
right,
is all that
she,
means.
She sent it to her accountant.
Sent it to her accountant.
They looked into it and they said it's legitimate. It's from the government.
Which government? legitimate. It's legitimate. It's
Kazakhstan.
Are two separate things. Oh, anyhow. Anyone else get census form? Okay, I didn't think so. Yeah, it's not a year. Next one is one, what? This is, what year is this? 2020. Next census, as far as I know. What's the secret to your success? Well, it's not quite the way I'd phrase it. My success is a secret, I think. But thank you for saying that, Ann. Very nice of you. Where is Ann? Ann Holbach? How are you? What's the secret to your success, Ann? Yeah, okay. All right. We'll work on it together. What can you buy on eBay that weighs between 5 and 10 pounds, has between 6 and 10 wheels, hums, vibrates, sometimes smokes, but refuses to budge, and is not typically used for sexual purposes? Matt Goulet. Do you have one, Matt?
I have a lot of them.
You have a lot of them? Okay. Well, let's see what he's got here. I'm kind of curious. You buy him on eBay then, do you? Can I get you to stand up, man?
Yeah.
Matt Goulet, everybody. How are you?
Hi. Good.
And these, is this a hobby of yours, or is it do with your vocation?
No, it's a hobby, definitely.
How'd you first get into these things?
Well, actually, my dad got me into it.
Does dad have one, too?
Yeah, I think he might have when he was younger.
Well, it's a young guy's thing, obviously.
So what would you like to know about it?
You know what it is, maybe.
Okay. Lionel Trains. Steam
engines. Lionel Trains. Yeah, I used to have a great set. My mom gave them away. It killed me. Yeah. I went to college, and my mom gave my trains away. What is that?
So I have a whole basement full of them.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and a big layout. Yeah. And all that kind of
the ones that smoke?
Oh, yeah. Smoke and whistle and make all sorts of noises.
I had one, I had a little freight car where a cop chased a bum around the freight. Did you know? I went out and bought it with my own money one year, and she went with all the rest of them.
Yeah, they still make those.
They do?
Absolutely.
And it smoked. Did you? The smoke tablets?
The hobo car did that, but.
Not the hobo car, but in the engine, the little black engine, and you put smoke pellets in it.
They have the track has three rails and big transformers and stuff. Yeah.
You still run them and wear the hat and everything?
Well, you know, the hat doesn't get worn too much, but, you know.
And then there were those guys who went to the HO, you know, and I really had no feeling for them whatsoever. They like the smaller gauge, you know.
Accurate scale, and that's no fun. It's got to be old metal, tin plate, heavy.
What's your favorite car or your most treasured?
Favorite car. That's hard. Maybe the Hiawatha trains, the old Hiawatha train set. It's a passenger set they had.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Just my neighbor gave me his Milwaukee Road set, and Mom gave those away, too. I had a whole set with silhouettes on the windows that light up, and you see the silhouettes of the passengers on the window.
Yeah. That's very sad.
Oh, it's, I hate to even think about it. You wake up sometimes in the middle of the night, and you go through all your life's regrets. That's right near the top. It's not maybe not number one, but
I bet it is.
Three or four. All right, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Thanks.
There you go. We got Lionel Trains. I loved them. Choo Choo. Guess how my husband and I celebrated our first anniversary. So you're into this too now, huh? By marriage.
I'm afraid I am, yes. Mm-hmm.
So when you played with trains on your first anniversary?
I was invited to sleep in a caboose.
That's a good one.
You could say that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. That was your first anniversary. That's not how you met.
No. The trains were kept a secret for some time before I was introduced to them.
It could be a deal breaker, couldn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just financially, even.
You okay with it now?
Yeah, they're sweet. They're very sweet.
Do you collect your own things?
Books and elephants.
Books
I knew there was replicas of elephants, not actual ones.
Real books.
Yes.
Sari, is that right?
That's right.
The Goulets, ladies and gentlemen. Now you know them. You know all about them. Would you be able to swim in a pool of Jell-O? You know, where is Joe? Why would you even think of this, Joe? Yeah?
Not you, specifically. Uh-huh. Someone.
Someone could. It's been tried. I know that. I saw it on television one time years ago. But I think it's possible. But I don't even know why I'd bother to think about it. Think she'll run, John Hart, Chappaqua? You're from up there, huh, John?
I am.
She a neighbor?
In the same town, sure.
Same town? Do you see her around at the 7-Eleven or something? Hillary?
We do. She participates in, like, the town parade, and we see her Starbucks. And
you see her Starbucks, yeah?
Yep, yep.
Is it okay to go up to Hillary at a Starbucks? And
it is, actually, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, a lot of people talk to her. You know, I think they get cornered by a lot of people, too.
Yeah. Small talk, nothing big.
Right, exactly. She doesn't talk, like, foreign policy or anything like that.
Yeah, not at Starbucks. You wouldn't do that. Well, that's cool, anyhow. And then what do you do up there, John?
I work for Nokia. Smartphones?
I know what they are. I think I'm too stupid to know what a smartphone is. It's a Nokia. They're very nice.
Very nice, yeah. Durable. Yeah. I mean, I probably have one here.
You have it, really? And they got those terrific cameras on there.
They do, yeah.
You just sit in the back and take pictures and stuff.
Stay in the back, right, which is up my alley.
Sorry?
It's kind of up my alley, staying to the back.
Well, I thought you meant that's what you do.
No.
Is that your function there, to stay in back at the company, or what end of it are you in?
From time to time, but I'm in the back end of the operations. Yeah, human resources.
Human resources. Okay, good man. All right. Well, nice to meet you. Oh, we gotta go. And it's time to play the What Do You Know quiz. Before we can do that, we have to know who can and cannot participate in that quiz, and who ended up with you. Could you come down here, dear, please, and we'll do it over here. This is the four disclaimers, of course. Legally, we're required to do this. Not really, but... Huh? Yeah. Sure. That, yeah, do them all. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, you are?
I'm Ann.
Yeah, she's Ann, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
You got it.
Okay. The four disclaimers. Number one, all questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who show sticklers who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Number two, so does Obamacare just cover your Obama? Number three, persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the phone lines trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. Number four, all opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Hold on. Thank you, Ann. Keep that little souvenir of limited value. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to... Okay, your hand was up first. Your hand shot up. That doesn't usually happen, so I want to really reward that. Still wearing the ears there, huh?
Yeah, I can't take the ears off. They're pretty great.
Was there a rest of that costume, too? Or?
Yeah, there was a tail. The tail actually terrified me when I'd run into it. There was an animal on my butt.
No comment. Okay. And so, was there more? Just nothing, anything between the ears and the tail? Furry.
Yeah, there was a tie. It's a cat costume for those who can't.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I could be just hallucinating here. You never know. Your name is?
My name is Jennifer Martin.
Jennifer, give me one good reason, Jennifer, you should play this quiz.
I've been wanting to hang out with that ostrich on your booth there for a long time.
No, that's John. Come on up, Jennifer. Oh! Have a seat, if you would, there, right in the next to that emu, technically.
Sorry. Emu.
It's not real, so it doesn't really matter what.
Does he have a name?
No. Never bother naming the thing. I don't want to get too attached to it in case it gets unstuffed. So, Jennifer, what are you into these days?
I work at the graduate school at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
You do? What do you do for them?
I do academic planning and programming for graduate programs.
For programs or for the people who are trying to get into the programs?
For the programs.
Oh, for the programs.
Yep.
Well, someone's got to plan, though.
Someone's got to do the administration.
So can you just be whimsical and plan them really in strange ways?
Well, other people do the planning, and then I help them get through the stages of governance.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
How'd you end up in that?
By luck.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's good stuff.
What did I mean? What'd you start out doing?
I don't even know what it is. Making copies of things for the grad school.
Copy girl? You're a copy girl? Copy you worked girl your way up from copy girl, and now you're running the whole damn grad school.
Yeah.
That's quite a success story, ladies and gentlemen. Any particularly the program areas, you do all of them, or you just...
Yeah, there's over 150 graduate programs at the university, so...
What's your favorite right now? What do you really enjoy planning?
I enjoy the arts and humanities program.
Arts and humanities. Good. Excellent. And for kicks, what do? Besides wear ears and a tail.
I come to radio shows.
That's it?
No. I play a lot of dodgeball in the winter.
Do you? Oh, yeah. You're a dodgeball person. Do you really? Seriously?
Yeah, on Tuesdays.
No kidding.
Yeah, they do it at elementary schools. There's, you know, people sign up, co-ed.
You play against little kids?
That would make
That'd
it easier.
That'd be pretty easy, yeah. Because some can throw pretty hard.
No, just adults.
You know, if there was one thing I hated in gym class, it was dodgeball. Because there was always some guy who could throw it 100 miles an hour.
There still is, yeah. It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. Yeah. And they leave big red welts on there.
Yep.
Yep. Horrible. They still have those red balls?
The ones we play with aren't hard like kickballs. They're a little softer, but they can still really sting.
Oh, man, I hated it. I hated it. I got hit just to get out of it. Yeah, I didn't want to be the tension of it because I knew it was going
to
happen.
We pay to do it, so that's really we like weird. It, yeah.
But you must be like semi-pro then at this point.
Yeah.
Is there a league? Is there a dodgeball league here?
I think there is in the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, the regular guys gym or whatever that was called. That movie.
Dodgeball.
Yeah, dodgeball. Yeah. Yeah, that was good. Movie. All right, so Jennifer, someone out there plays along with you. You know how this works. General knowledge sort of quiz and.
Yeah, I heard the guy last week. That was.
There you go.
An interesting guy.
Doesn't always work like that, though. Yeah. So someone out there, and they, then what happens?
People who want to play along, pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669, and you ask them a qualifying question.
Okay, here, out of 10 working people, how many find it hard, if not impossible, to work in teams? This is surprisingly high finding. Out of 10 working people, how many of them find it hard, if not impossible, to work in teams? Tough being a team player. Joan, what do you think about that question? Did you hear it?
Joan? Hello?
Oh, Joan. Oh, hi, Joan.
Yes.
Out of 10 working people, how many find it hard to work in teams?
Is it a percentage that we're looking for?
No, we're looking for out of 10, a number. It's a pretty high number, I got to admit.
Okay. Let's say 8 out of 10.
Say what?
8 out of 10.
8 out of 10 is right, Joan. Holy cow, what insights you show into this whole problem. Joan, this is Jennifer. She's your teammate here.
Hi, Joan.
Hi, Jennifer.
Okay, are you outdoors now or something?
No, actually, I'm multitasking.
You're multitasking? I would drop one task if I were you. And
I'm trying to. Can I lower my television, my radio? Or
lower your radio or, yes, or lower your phone, one of the two.
Okay, hold on.
Lower. My dad used to say that. Said to turn it down. Said lower lower your music. So we take it and put it on the ground sometimes, just to annoy you. That's pretty cute. Are you back, Joan?
I am back.
Okay, Jennifer. Did you meet Jennifer here?
Yeah, we met.
Yes.
Joan. Okay, and she's in charge of all graduate programs, so pretty good partner to have. Two of you work as a team. We have various categories, and what are they, Sarah?
The categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, or odds and ends.
Okay, Joan, you pick the first one, please.
Let's do current events.
Current events, right out of the news. According to Hallmark, now they came out with this little ornament which says on it, "Don, we now are what apparel?" Have you seen this in the news?
Don, we now are what apparel?
Yes, they changed the words somewhat from the original song. hear about this?
Gay. Well, it should be gay, but...
Yeah, but they Hallmark, you know Hallmark. Don, we know our what apparel?
Jennifer, just, what do you think?
Did
you
happy? Did they change it to happy?
No.
Festive.
No.
Our Google apparel?
I guess you didn't see it. You didn't see it, huh, Joan?
Or, okay. No.
No, our fun apparel. And it's caused quite a bit of stir, needless to say. All right, so that just would be...
That's zero right and one
wrong. Okay, don't worry about it. What's left? We'll come back.
People, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
All right, Jennifer?
People.
Kind of survey results. 1 in 5, 1 in 8, or 1 in 12 people still have their Huggy Bears from their childhood, their little stuffed animals, whatever they were. Mine was a panda.
What are the odds again?
1 in 5, 1 in 8, or 1 in 12 people still have their little Huggy Bears.
What do you think, Joan?
Well, I would hope it would be 1 in 12.
But what do you think it would be?
1 in 8?
Surprisingly high, this finding.
1 in 5.
Whoa.
What do you think?
That's surprisingly high.
Joan.
Maybe we should go with 1 in 8?
I think we want to go with 1 in 5.
Whoa. That surprised me. That's how high that was. Joan?
I think I'll go with what Jennifer wants to go with.
1 in 5 is right. Yeah, unbelievable. I don't know if that's true. How many of you still have your Huggy Bears? Or whatever, your stuffed whatevers. Applaud. You got to applaud because we can't see that. Well, I don't have mine. I lost mine to terrible circumstances. What's left there?
1 right and 1 wrong.
Yeah, but what's left?
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Back to you, Joan.
Let's do odds and ends.
Odds and ends. Here it is. Who's more likely to be a psychopath, a CEO or a CPA?
There's no winning on this one, Joan.
Yeah, there's no, you know, it's a guess.
CEO or CPA
guess,
more likely
to
be
CEOs.
A... You say CEO?
I would.
Well, they say dentists are pretty likely.
We're not talking about
that. I know, but that's a normal thing.
Don't change the subject. CEO or CPA?
I kind of feel CPA. I don't know.
Maybe or CEO.
CEO? CEO, yeah.
What's the adjective again?
Psychopath.
Yeah, let's go CEO.
It's a noun, I think, but that's okay. Psychopathic would be.
They were so egotistical. Maybe it is a CEO.
Yeah, it's a CEO.
CEO, yes.
Yay.
Okay, good. Okay. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's 2 right and 1 wrong. And the categories remaining are places, things you should have learned in school, or science.
Yes.
Things you should have learned in school.
Here it is for all the beans. What early popular American song inspired the word dude that we use today?
Like a Beach Boys song or something?
No, early. You know, back in the old days.
Aaron.
You know, back in the old Yankee days.
Oh, Yankee Doodle Dandy?
That's exactly right. Holy cow. What a count for the
Huntsman. Jennifer, you'll celebrate the harvest season and taste Wisconsin cheese culture with a selection of artisanal cheeses and their perfect companions from Fermagination on Madison's historic Capitol Square. Joan, start your days the What Do You Know audience way with a cup of Stephen Brew's breakfast blend and banish afternoon cares with a cup of Costa Rican Terasu from Madison's Stephen Brew coffee. That's coffee done right. And each of you can join the pride of the thundering herd wearing a North Dakota State Bison t-shirt from NDSU and broaden your horizons reading What Do You Know. Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Congratulations to you both. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, Producer International. This is PRI, Public Radio International.
All right. Good applauder. I like it. Good. Look out who he does it. Very good. Very good.
Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, a live performance from the man with the golden pipes, Nicholas David. Thanks for the memos and more of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who's so happy with his Obamacare, he's getting random elective surgery. It's Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, each week at this time, we read an actual memo. We do. From an actual listener. Even more surprising. And here we have one now. This is on Irish dance. You don't get a lot of these. A lot of bathroom-related, you know, bathroom behavior, bathroom untidiness, that sort of thing. But first, Irish dance memo. It reads something like this. Lindsay and Monica asked me to email you information about signing Alex up to compete in Irish dance since I handle the FESH calendar for them. A FESH, pronounced FESH, is the name for an Irish dance competition. The plural is FESHANA, pronounced FESHANA. That sounds like Yiddish at that point. So you'll get periodic emails from me when FESHANA in the area open up for registering. Well, if your FESHANA opens up, then you got to drain it immediately. And then keep it dry afterwards. There are two websites to sign up at. Both handle registrations for FESHANA in the Chicago area, but they don't overlap. A FESH is on one or the other website. For information, we are in the Mid-America FESH region. Go in and create a profile for Alex at each site. It's pretty self-explanatory. Since Alex has never competed, he will first sign up as a first FESH. He will only be in that category once. Well, there's only one first FESH. And after that, he will be in the beginner category for a while. At whichever FESH website has the FESH you want to attend, you'll sign up for the FESH that you want. The category he will be in, first FESH for the first FESH, plus the individual dances that Alex will do. Monica said that Alex will be ready to compete in his jig. The official name is Light Jig and is Reel. There are the two soft shoe dances that boys do since boys do not do the slip jig. Later, he'll be able to dance the hard shoe dances, the treble jig, the hornpipe, and the traditional set. For now, just sign Alex up for the light jig and reel, and of course, pay online. There are two FESHANA in January currently open, the Wisconsin Winter FESH, the Dairyland FESH, both on World Wide Web, FESHworks, both are in Milwaukee. There will be other FESHANA opening up for registration, and they do, I will send you an email. If you want to go to one, don't wait to sign up. They can and do fill up.
Oh,
your FESH can fill up pretty quick there. Lindsay and Monica will talk to you about once classes resume in December about what Alex should wear to compete and everything else you should know about competing. However, they wanted me to get you this information now so that you can sign up without waiting. They don't want the FESHANA to reach capacity before Alex signs up, and right now they are crazy busy getting everyone ready for the... the Midwestern Championship. Remember, Alex will only do a first FESH once, even though he'll later be adding in hard shoe dances that he never did at first FESH. These later dances will be danced for the first time as a beginner since you only have a first FESH once. Mom said something like that. What was it? I can't remember.
FESH.
She probably would have, I think. If you decide to sign him up for a second FESH before he dances his first FESH, he still has to be entered in that second FESH as a beginner because it will fall after he does his first FESH. Ask me if you have any questions. See you later. Best regards, Lauren. Thank you so much and all that FESHness. About anyone here in Irish dance? Anyone do a FESH? Anyone here done a FESH? No? Okay. Thinking about it? Where can they send memos and communications of any sort?
They can send them to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org with the subject line memos, or they can go to notmuch.com and post it there.
Okay. And they can also reach me on my Twitter if they want to
They can.
Do that.
Yep.
How do they do that?
They would tweet you at @myfeldman.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a good thing. Hey, I'm pretty excited. If you've seen The Voice, then you've seen Nicholas David. He's an outstanding, an amazingly outstanding talent. Great voice, and he is the feeling. And he really is. And he's here with us today. And I'm so excited about it. Would you welcome, please, Nicholas David, ladies and gentlemen. Come on over and sit down here. Thank you so much for doing this, man.
What's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
Thank you. I know you were playing last night at the House of Blues in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm still there.
You're still there, and you got here in the middle of the night or something, and then you got another gig tonight here in town at the High Moon Saloon.
Mm-hmm.
How are you holding up on all this?
Yeah, good.
You're right, no sunglasses, you don't know what's going on anymore.
Yeah, no, right? I do. It's kind of just like, it's kind of my costume, my mask.
Yeah, yeah.
So my character.
It helps a little bit, I guess, on the road to have something like that.
Yeah.
So singing with Smokey Robinson, kind of easy to get into a sing-off with Smokey Robinson.
Man, unreal, super unreal. That was, I knew we were singing together. There, kind of a thing that maybe is not as well known is I'm always 5 minutes behind. And I was getting ready, and they're always like, Nick David's got to get ready. And then they're like, Nick D, Smokey Robinson wants to meet you. I got ready in like 30 seconds. And we met in this little like kind of boutique thing like next to the stage, and it was unreal. I just remember talking with him, and I'd be like, you're telling me this right now. I had to like touch him.
He must get a lot of that, though.
Yeah, it's unreal. Like,
he's still got it. His voice is still there. Yeah, after all these years, amazing.
Smooth cat, super smooth.
Yeah. An unbelievable voice. Mm-hmm. And yours is along those lines. It really is.
Thank you, Michael.
You know, it's you're kind of like maybe a soul singer or, of the old variety that you don't hear anymore.
We've been toying around with the idea of universal soul music.
Yeah. Hmm. We have?
Yeah, you and me.
How far? You're kind of a genre defier, though, right?
I think so. I kind of, it's all music.
Yeah.
You know, and I always think like humans, we try to classify things, you know, and it's just like it's music. We gather the world's rhythms, is what I say, and just like sing and speak from the heart. It's for the heart, from the heart.
Yeah. I love it, though, that little video that's circulating now. When you're 9 years old, is that when you started playing the piano?
Or? Yeah, 8 or 9. I never really remember how old people are in second grade.
It varies quite a bit, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like 8 or 9, and I played, and my grandfather actually was sick, and his dying words were, play the piano.
Really?
Told my grandma that, and then the next day she told me that, and every once in a while there'll be moments, you know, and I'll still hear my grandmother saying that, and I'll sometimes have to hold back the tears, but it's just like that, I can't believe that was his last words on this earth.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like my mantra.
And for you, I mean, were you musical before that? I mean, you must have been musical.
Yeah, my other grandfather, he played the accordion, the piano, and so, I mean, I had that. I have it. I got the gene. You know, I got the DNA, but
yeah,
it's my mom and dad. I'm not so much. I think I kind of have a thing where it skipped.
Yeah.
Skips a generation.
Yeah, I did it in my family, too. Other qualities, but you know, my daughters are very attractive, for example. But I love it, and also in this little video thing where your mom was saying that you wanted to take voice lessons.
Yeah.
And she said, do you sing?
Yeah.
Or can you sing? Right, that was her reaction, because nobody knew that you could sing.
Yeah, I remember I was singing some Alice in Chains, and I got a knock on the door, and she's like, was that you? And I was like, yeah. She's like, will you sing for me? I'm like, you have to turn around, I'm going to turn around, and I'm going to shut the light off.
Just sing a little Alice in Chains.
Yeah, just sing a little Alice in Chains, my mom, yeah.
Yeah. Did they never hear that before coming out of your room, Alice in Chains?
I mean, to singing it, probably not. And then we just went and sang. We met up with this vocal teacher named John Lynn, and I sang for him, and he's like, what you have I can't teach, but I can help you be more comfortable.
Yeah.
Like, in singing that. But he's like, you got it. Whatever it is, you got it.
Is the shyness still there somewhat when you perform? Or?
Kind of. That's why the sunglasses, when I put the sunglasses on.
Yeah.
Out the door.
Yeah, I think it's true of a lot of performers.
It is kind of true, basically. To be honest. We joke, but it's kind of, I'm like, even people are like, I get a picture. I'm like, hang on, I got to get my mask on.
Yeah. But I mean, in general, I think a lot of performers are actually kind of shy individuals. And when they perform, they let it be.
Yeah, or overly sensitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're overly sensitive?
I would agree.
I'm overly sensitive, but I have no talent. So that's the only difference between us, I guess. Well, thank you so much for coming. It's great, thanks for the opportunity. And it doesn't seem like fame, which you're in the midst of, has affected you in any way.
No, I kind of joke. I'm like, I never changed, but what changed was how people see me.
Yeah.
So it's just like I've always been myself. Even on the show, they're like, when you wake up, who do you want to be? I'm like, me.
Yeah.
Who do you want to dress like? Yeah. Me. Yeah. Who do you want to sound like? Me.
Yeah. It's hard not to do that, yeah. In my opinion. I want to get up, number one. I put my feet on the ground and stand. That's how I would answer that now. And like, for example, you're going down to Mexico. You're working with kids.
Yeah, with the Smile Network. I'm doing some stuff with children. Again, just I feel extremely blessed, and I feel I'm here to serve, and that's the story.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, man.
What a guy. Will you play for us?
Sure, I would love to.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nicholas David. The Feeling.
So, been on the road actually with the Avid Brothers, and we just got back. And we had a couple of days, and then we're back on the road again. And this is a tune I wrote for my kids and my gal. And I'd sing it to them every night. So it's kind of become a tradition when I'm away. Every time I play, I dedicate this song to them, and it's called Lonely. I hope you do enjoy it. Late at night, close my eyes and think of you. Late at night, close my eyes and think of you. It won't be long. I won't be long. Cause I'm longing and I'm lonely for you. I'm not afraid anymore. I got two hands. I got two hands. I know days that I don't, but mine's open. Cause I wanna be with you. Don't leave me lonely in the fall. I can meet you when you're gone. Will you be there even when I'm wrong? When you hold me, everything disappears. Late at night, I close my eyes and think of you. Late at night, close my eyes and think of you. It won't be long. I won't be long. Cause I'm longing and I'm lonely for you. Cause I'm longing and I'm lonely for you. Cause I'm longing and I'm lonely for you. Cause I'm lonely. Thank you. Thank you very much. I got time for one more? Yes, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful song.
Thank you. That's my sad one. I'd say that's one of the more sad ones. And then I have one spooky song. Here we go.
We'll give them a little, but not enough. And we'll keep them wanting more. A society based in fear, it'll be easier to control. We'll allow them enough to get by. We need fuel for the game. Cause we're so far off track. What's the point of going back? Why should we right our wrongs? What's now is different. So it's full speed ahead. Benefit us. Cause we're so far off track. What's the point of going back? Why should we right our wrongs? What's time is different. So it's full steam ahead. La da la 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 da. La la do da da do la 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 da 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 la 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 da 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 da.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Nicholas David, ladies and gentlemen, the Phelan.
You're listening to Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI Public Radio International. I can't remember either.
Give stuff away.
Give stuff away.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Oh, okay. What do I do now? Is this audience time?
I think
talk
so, yeah.
I was moved in so many different directions. I don't know what to do.
I know. It was great. He's great.
And the first song, I mean, it was ageless. That could have been like a Civil War ballad or something.
Totally.
That first
one. Beautiful.
You know, from the 19th century or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this one here is like a Broadway show tune.
It's a rollicking political satire.
Yeah, but it's like from a dark Broadway show tune.
Sweeney Todd of America.
Sweeney Todd type song.
Yeah. It's great.
He messed up my genres, man.
we have genre confusion.
Okay, back in the audience here now. How you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, pretty good. Okay, didn't get much sleep last night, huh? Couldn't be the show.
Definitely not.
Were you out last night or what?
Nope, just hanging out at home.
Okay, really? Like, well, that makes you tired, too. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
We've met before, haven't we?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, right here. Okay. Yeah. You're sitting in the same place, I think.
Yeah, I don't think I moved too much.
No. What are you doing these days?
Retired, enjoying life.
Yeah. Well, how do you enjoy life when you're retired? That's why I'm afraid to do it, because I don't think I would enjoy life so much.
Well, that's good. You do some volunteer work, get involved in the neighborhood. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. You don't play golf or anything, though, do you? You need a sport to be retired, I think, or something.
Chase a cat around.
Cat chasing, I could do that, I guess. Get a cat, I guess. All right, let's see. Megan. It's a long E, I think, here. Corin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Continuous Improvement Project Manager. Whoa, boy, there's a job that never ends. Continuous Improvement Project. Where is Megan?
Back.
Oh, I'm back there. Okay, I'm going back there then. Be right there. I'll continuously, we'll get there eventually. She wants to know, what do you do to methodically improve each show? Hey, that's your business, not mine. Believe me, I've stayed the same now all these many years. I don't know if I could improve or what that would be. Can I get you to stand up and say hello? Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Good. What is that exactly? Continuous Improvement Project Manager.
Are you familiar at all with the quality industry?
No. Why, what would I know from quality?
Well, let me ask you this. Did you create any kind of a list today, checklist of any kind?
No.
Well, you might want to start.
Oh. What are you implying or inferring?
No, I guess it was like the biggest common tool that people use, and they don't even realize it's a quality tool.
Quality tool.
It's something that you do to make sure that you get it right.
Make a list and check it?
Yeah. Instead of just kind of showing up and, you know.
Well, that would be on my list, I think. Making lists would be number one.
I love to make
lists. Make more lists.
Yes.
I used to do that. I usually been problem solving, you know. Mm-hmm. I do the thing with the line down the middle, you know.
Pros and cons.
Yeah. Why? Okay. Staying with her, you know, this here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Leaving, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, that sort of thing.
That's another quality tool.
Quality tool, yes, a quality tool, okay. So, and then continuous improvement.
Well, continuous.
And the science of continuous improvement is?
It's an organizational development endeavor.
Yeah.
So you, as an organization, you do something, then you go back and you do a post-mortem. How did it go? What worked? What didn't work?
Post-mortem sounds a little serious, doesn't it?
I guess. But it really isn't. It's usually done over drinks.
Okay.
Which helps.
This is done in businesses, then?
Yes.
Or groups?
Any kind of an organization. Yeah. Families, churches, yeah. Nonprofits, yeah. Businesses, hospitals.
Would corporations do this?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Governments would do this?
I would hope so.
Congresses, for example, they do continuous improvement?
They need some more of that.
Okay. And then, so I should start doing that. So I make a list, and what else should I do then?
Well, there.
I want to continuously improve. I really do.
Do you really?
No.
Okay. Then I think you're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you. Stasis. Here's a... No,
thank you very much.
Thank you. That was very illuminating. All right. That's a good thing, though. I should do more of that. Martha Zadowski is here. Did you teach at Tremper High School in Kenosha? Yes, I did. Yeah, really? Were you in my class?
I was the first class.
What class? What year were you? 60, no, I wasn't there in 66, a little after that. But okay, yeah, Tremper, the Tremper Trojans. Yeah, the Fighting Trojans. One of my favorite teams, I think, of all time. And, yeah, Tremper. Hi, Tremper.
What year did you teach there?
Let's see now. I graduated here, and I went there in 71. I was there till about 70. Then I went to the alternative school.
Right.
And then...
My brother was there when you taught.
Yeah. What was your brother's name?
Bob Sadowski.
Bob Sadowski.
Oh, yeah, Bob.
I got to look through my records, you know. Yeah, I'll see.
Tell me that you taught there.
Can you tell me that he was in my class? Did you say that?
I think he was.
A lot of people were, and I never saw them. So there was the...
English? What? Did you teach English?
Yes. Yeah. English as a second language for Americans. That was one.
Yep.
Well, nice to see you.
Yeah.
See you. Are you still in Kenosha?
No.
All right. Yes, Trump, good old Tremper. I was the guy in Tremper who, I came from Madison to Tremper, and when I came down there, I saw smoke rising from the school, and it was right in the, you know, and we were having a little bit of trouble on campus in those years. And I saw smoke rising, and I thought, oh, my God, the revolution has reached Kenosha, Tremper High School. And it turned out to be Senior Bratwurst Day. So I was a little, you know, it was kind of I had to make some adjustments. Plus, the book I was using as my handbook was Teaching as a Subversive Activity. You know, I was a little... things like that. Okay. Is Madison really an island of sanity surrounded by a sea of insanity? Or is the reverse true? Well, you can see it either way, actually, Steve. Where's Steve Byers?
Right here.
Hey, Steve. Is it worth the trip backwards? Yes, I think so, because Steve has a point he wants to make here. So I don't mind making a trip for that sort of thing. Steve, what do you do there, Steve, in Illinois?
Well, I work to help protect natural areas, prairies, woodlands, and wetlands.
Yeah, but what do you do on mic? Do you work to protect natural areas and wetlands?
I do that, yes.
Do you actually get out there and plant them? Or
I do that if it needs it, or I do controlled burns or cut away the buckthorns, all kinds of different kinds of things.
Really?
And work with people.
You work with people? You plant people out there, too? In Illinois, anything is possible, I know.
Anything, that's right. Yeah. Well, I help them understand why these places are special.
Yeah, the wetlands are really important.
They're all important.
Yeah. And which wetlands do you favor?
The Fen wetlands.
The Fen?
Yeah, the Fens. Not to be confused with fresh.
No, but more Fen.
More Fen, yes.
Fen meaning?
These are special wetlands with groundwater discharge, with cool plants, lots of special things associated with those.
And in what area, where will we find those? Like right in the greater Chicago area?
Some of them up, there are a lot of them in Wisconsin. They're associated with the glaciation that came down, left gravel deposits, and that's where the water flows.
Why are they all laughing? All the people you came with are laughing.
Yeah, they're my buds.
You find this amusing, this Fen discussion?
You are just feeding into his favorite.
No, but it's great. It's great that he's responsible for the wetlands in Illinois.
It is. It is.
Do you ever get out there and help him?
Yes, I do.
You're out there in the Fens?
Yes, I'm out in the Fens.
And with the big rubber boots and the...
Big rubber boots, mud knee socks. Well, yeah.
Okay, well, all right, then you have a right to laugh, I guess. That's pretty good. Oh, well, that's fantastic. And yeah, have you always been in this field, or how did you get in this?
I have. I've always enjoyed working with wildlife, wild places, and we enjoy kayaking, canoeing, and biking, and one of the places we're thinking about retiring to is Madison, but we don't know if we should retire to Madison or Richland Center.
Or Boaz, for that matter. Boaz is pretty nice, too. And you want to make an argument for Richland Center? Yeah, do you have wetlands there?
Oh, I'm sure we do.
I'm sure we do. We'll fix you up one way or the other, man.
All right.
Good to have you. We got wetlands here. You see, by the highway out there. They replanted all. Yeah. So they get all the runoff, but still they're nice. Yeah. Steve Byers, come on. He does wetlands. So, you know. Okay. All right. We're gonna. You know, we should get somebody else to play the quiz. I'm thinking. But yes. Is something on your mind? Oh, you want to play the quiz. All right, well, you're way on the other side of the room there, but I guess we could do that. I'll come over there. What the heck? Getting a lot of miles in here today. This is good for my cardio, though. Yeah. Where'd you go? Oh, why don't you come over here at least? Got a few feet off this journey. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
It seems like it might be a little too important to you. You're pretty excited about this.
Well, yeah, I have to impress my in-laws.
It's too late now, anyway, I think, probably.
I know I jumped the gun, but I was kind of excited.
How long have you been married?
3 years now.
3 years. If you haven't impressed them in 3 years, I don't know if it's going to happen.
I know. I think I have. They came with me, so that's good.
Cool. That's cool. That's a good sign right there. And your name is?
Ben.
Ben, are you from around here?
I'm from Neenah. And so my wife and in-laws are from Oshkosh. But, so.
Is that a problem, the disparity between Neenah and Oshkosh?
No, It works out well, so.
From Menasha, that would be a problem.
See that? Yeah, that would be. Yeah.
All right, Ben, give me one good reason. Is it to impress the in-laws? I presume.
To impress the in-laws, yeah.
To impress the in-laws, ladies and gentlemen. For you guys. This is for you. I can't think of a better reason than impressing your in-laws. I've never impressed in-laws, I don't think. Hey, have a seat there if you would. Right there, Ben. That water is still good. It's been there a while, but looks almost full. I can change it out if you want different water.
No, I'm good.
I got some more somewhere, I think. Oh, my pad's coming off again. I hate it when this happens. All right, I get to... All right, a second.
Careful, those are very expensive.
I know, they're very expensive. They keep giving me the ones where the pads come off. Excuse me for just a second here, Ben.
No, that's okay.
What are you doing these days?
I work for Thrivent Financial up in Appleton. That's a fraternal benefits company that has insurance and investments.
Were they formerly Lutherans?
Yes, formerly an aid association for Lutherans.
Yeah.
Now they are for all Christians.
All Christians?
Yes.
So like a Jew knows Christians? Could they get a little coverage there? A little...
I believe so. I could sponsor you, and you could become a member if you'd like.
Really?
Yes.
Will they do a check on you?
Oh, no, no.
Because I grew up around Lutherans, and I'm familiar with many of their customs.
Yes.
The Lutheran circle, I know of that.
Yeah, that's...
Should I put that on the form, or should I...
Nah, you can just put, you know me.
Yeah. No Ben. Okay, yes. No Ben. What's your last name, Ben?
Parkhurst.
Parkhurst?
Parkhurst. Yeah.
Parkhurst. From yes. The Parkhurst? Parkhursts?
I would think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that could do me a lot of good, possibly, to know that I know the Parkhursts and all that stuff. Yeah, actually, many years ago when they were the Aid Association for Lutherans, I did some radio spots for them.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
They still wouldn't let me in, but I... they had some, like, homeowners. It was really cheap if you're a Lutheran for some reason. I don't know why. A Jewish homeowner goes right through the roof. I mean, it's really... I really can't. I could only afford to be a Lutheran homeowner. So that's good. And so what do you do for them exactly?
I work in their IT area. It's called desktop engineering. So make sure that all the software on all their laptops and desktops is the same and help manage it. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, that'd just take a day, wouldn't it? So you make sure they're all the same? Like they're all Dell or is it?
Well, some people...
Then what do you do the rest of the week?
Yeah. Well, there's always project work. And so...
Yeah. Where'd you get your training in IT?
I am self-taught. I am a proud nerd, you could say.
Yeah. And it paid, huh?
Yes.
It's funny, though. Those guys who, you know, nerds, whatever you want to call them, but now they're all making the big bucks and stuff.
Yeah.
So you're making big bucks out there, I bet.
I would say I'm making a nice living.
A nice living. See, that sounds Jewish. I say, Dad, how much money do you make? I make a nice living.
We Lutherans don't like to talk about money.
I know. We have that in common, actually. There's so much in common. We should really talk like this more often. It's such a good thing. You don't actually have to get there. And you don't have to sell policies or anything like that. That's good.
No, I don't. Yeah. My father did for many years. So.
Yeah. How's your coverage? Pretty good. Disability? Disability?
Yeah, very very nice. They make sure that you have disability coverage, and they try to upsell you on the higher one. They have good reasons to.
Yeah. You get a break, don't you? You get a discount on it.
Yes, I do get a discount.
Okay. Big discount?
Decent enough.
Decent? Okay. All right, good. You'll be covered. Because a young man, now the rates are better, you know, when you're young.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Ben, and what do you do for, you have a hobby or relaxation? What do you like to do? Sport?
I am not into sports. I enjoy reading. One of my other hobbies is I like old vacuum tube amplifiers and old audio equipment that I work on.
Good ones, do you?
Yeah, I just actually got one back from being restored, an old Dynakit, which is interesting.
Yep. Used to have them.
Oh, okay.
Well, they would glow. I like that. At night, you listen in your room, you just see the glow from your tubes.
Yes.
All the lights are out. Doing little Alice in Chains, and you see that glow.
I'm more of a classical kind of person.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
What do you favor?
I like the Romantic period, Debussy, Ravel, Satie.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. They're all good.
Yes, they are.
I'd be hard-pressed to pick a favorite for those guys, those three. You know, I wish I would have learned more about classical. We had one semester music appreciation in junior high school in Milwaukee, and we got Ravel's Bolero. That was about it.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah, yeah. I know. But I wish it, and the great gates of Kiev and all that stuff, yeah. You know, the Mazarsky and all that. But that's about it, you know, and I wish I would have a broader... Did you have a good musical education?
I was lucky. My mother was a church organist for many, many years. Ah. So on top of classical music, I got a lot of Onward Christian Soldiers and Almighty Fortress. So
yeah. Those I didn't get either. And I never washed my hands in the blood of the Lamb. I don't know what's the matter with me.
Oh.
There's lots of things wrong with my musical background, but it sounds like you had a good one. And do you play at all?
I sadly decided that I didn't like playing piano when I was a teenager, but I wish I kept it up.
Yeah. You played a little?
I played a little. Played trombone also.
Trombone. Mm-hmm. See, the trombone, that's a useful thing then.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Ben, someone out there will play along with you. And Sarah, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Did you have a good Halloween? Did you out there?
I did. It was relatively uneventful, but I found out there's a secret antique arcade in Madison.
No.
Somewhere. Yes, it's amazing.
Can you tell me where it is?
I
or
cannot.
Do you have to kill me?
Yeah. It's a secret. But we went, we played pinball and like Atari little kind of game.
There's an antique, you mean an old arcade game?
Yeah, really old, like Mrs. Pac-Man, Mr. Pac-Man, and old pinball. Amazing. So much fun.
Yeah.
I was wearing a Wonder Woman costume again. But.
That was it. That was your Halloween?
Yeah.
That's a little bit sad.
I liked it.
Playing old games and your Wonder Woman.
It worked
Woman.
For me.
I know. No, that sounds kind of cute. Now, on this quiz here, now someone wants to play along with Ben. Mm-hmm. How do they do it?
They pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669 or 1-800-WA-NO or 1-800-WHACK-NOW. And then you ask them a qualifying question.
I do?
Yep.
Okay, I got one right here. In the movies now, what is a best boy best at? You know, you watch the credits, and I always try to read all the credits, but they go too fast, you know. And you always see best boy, grip, and all that stuff. I want to know what the best boy is best at. What does the best boy do, in other words? And then what he gets credit for at the end of each movie you ever see. James is on the line from Springfield Mo. Hey, James.
Hey.
How you doing?
How are you?
I'm good.
I'm well.
How are things in Springfield, one of my favorite towns?
Oh, they're good.
Yeah? Anything coming up tonight? Any you going out, or...
Oh, no, probably not tonight. Working right now. Take the evening off.
Yeah? What are you working at?
Oh, I work for a telecommunications company.
You're on the job right now?
No.
Well, you are telecommunicating right now, so it would be perfectly
there you go.
Reasonable
it's,
thing
it's
for you to do.
Research.
James, in the movies, you know, when you see the credits at the end there, best boy, what does the best boy actually do? Do you know?
Well, I don't know that I've ever seen that.
Oh, never
maybe
seen that.
They're fetching thing.
No, that's a good boy. Good boy.
Oh,
you know,
not the best.
No, yeah, yeah. No, I'm afraid that's not it, James.
Okay. Thanks.
Sorry, man. Okay. Back to work in case you were. Okay, bye. Nice guy. Brian's on the line from Salisbury, Maryland. Hey, Brian.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. Are you in the middle of something right now? Or?
No, just I spend my Saturdays listening to you.
Well, that's a short Saturday, though.
Well, I'd listen to WPR most of the day.
Oh, yeah. Other shows, too?
Yes.
But, of course, this is your favorite, then.
It is my absolute favorite.
Have you been listening for a long time?
For about 3 years.
3 years? That's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, in dog years, that's almost over 20 years.
That's right.
Okay, do you have a dog?
Not anymore. I've got a cat.
Just a cat now? Are you more of a cat person or a dog person?
Well, I'm more of a dog person, but don't have a dog now, so I substituted a cat.
It's not a good substitution, though. Do you find... I'm a dog person, too. And, you know, I lost my Labrador a couple of years ago. That was a big shock to my system and all that. But I never thought of getting a cat, though. Because it's...
Well, the cat got me. The cat ran into the building. That I'm a pastor of a church. The cat ran into the church and ran up to me.
Oh, it did?
Yeah, so I thought it meant something.
Yeah, maybe this cat knew you from a former lifetime or something.
It could be.
That could be, because cats are sort of very spiritual. Picking out a pastor... That's kind of an interesting thing to do.
I think he was lucky.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds good. Okay. Does the cat have a name?
Andrew.
Andrew is a nice name. Or St. Andrew would be even better, I think.
Well, hey, the Church of St. Andrews.
Is it? Okay. So the cat, a cat named Andrew comes into St. Andrews. What are the odds of that
there
happening?
You go.
Almost impossible.
Sounds like a good story.
Okay. Reverend, can I call you Brian? Is
you
that okay?
Call me Brian.
I don't
want
to be
Brian,
too familiar. Please. You know what a best boy does in the movies? What his responsibilities
are? An electrician? An electrician?
That's exactly right. He's a grip and electrician, lights and such and all that. Works with the gaffers, who I don't know what they do either, but I think he's in charge of the gaffers. So he must know what they do. That's the important thing. Brian, this is Ben here on my right.
Hi, Brian.
Yes, hi, Ben.
And he's at the Lutheran Insurance now, right now. You're not Lutheran, right, Brian?
No, I'm Episcopalian.
Episcopalian, okay. Well, it's something to shoot for, then.
Hook up with the Lutherans, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, some place to go. Okay, so the two of you are a team right now, Ben and Brian, and the two of you work together, and we have various categories, have we not, Sarah?
They are. We do. Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, uh-huh. Science, or odds and ends.
Okay. Brian, let's pick the first one. What would you like?
People.
People it is. Okay. Okay, the percentage of drivers who would drive naked if it weren't for truckers. Is it 1%, 3%, or 9%?
I would hope it would be 1%.
I would hope it would be 1%.
This is not about hope. This is about people.
What do you think, Ben? 1% or 3%?
I don't know.
Or 9%.
Or 9%.
I would go with 9%. That's
you would go with 9%?
Yeah.
Well, I'll go with...
What's your thinking there, Ben?
Well, I'm thinking right now I don't want an SUV if this is actually true.
Well, you want to be off the ground, I think, if you're going to do it. You know.
Oh, yeah, that's... Yeah. I don't know. I think 9% because people...
Okay, let's go with... We can go with 9%.
9% is right. It's... I don't know who... Let's take... Here. Everybody close your eyes. Applaud if you would like to drive naked. If they're, close your eyes and applaud if you would.
That's about 9%.
Just one guy is all I heard. So I don't know about the figures here, but we call that...
One right and zero wrong.
Okay, very good.
The categories left are current events, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Do you ever have an urge to drive?
No.
You know? No, okay.
Also, it makes me think of those old Naga hide seats, too.
Ooh. Oh, God.
Yeah. Bad.
You had Naga hide in your car? That's a little unusual, I think.
Is it? You know what I mean. Vinyl seats. Ouch.
How about
so in other words, you've been naked on Naga hide and you didn't care for it. Exactly.
No, but you know, sometimes you were a kid, you were wearing shorts or something, it was the summer, and you sit down on those hot vinyl seats, it's unpleasant.
So, okay.
That's all. Okay, enough.
Yes.
I was thinking things you should have learned in school had you been...
Oh, yes,
attention.
The categories. I'm sorry. School?
Yes, please.
Okay, you bet. I got it right here. True or false? Can't go wrong on this. The spacesuit Neil Armstrong wore on the moon was made by a bra manufacturer. True or false?
I think it's true.
Why do you think that, Brian?
I think I heard it somewhere. Some report on television.
Okay.
I'll go with you. One surprised me if it's some conglomerate that made a little bit of everything, made the suit.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's true. International Latex. Where are you going to go? International Latex. And it gave him good support, too, the whole time he was on it.
That's two right and zero wrong.
What's left there, sir?
Current events, places, science, or odds and ends.
Okay. Brian, back to you.
Current events.
Current events. All right. This is right out of the news. Dell laptops. The new Dell laptops reportedly smell like what?
Well, I wish we used Dells at work.
What do you use?
Vono, the old IBM company.
Really?
Lenovo, yeah.
Lenovo, yeah.
Yes.
Chinese. They're Chinese.
Yes.
Dell laptops. There's been made big news all over. I read about this. Dell laptops. They smell curiously like, well, you don't expect your laptop to smell.
I don't know. Maybe they're floral? Like flowers?
Floral.
If only.
You're a cat owner, Brian. Any idea what these laptops?
No, I don't. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Wet dog?
I'll go with whatever you want to try.
Okay, no idea. No. No stab at this? A stab, Reverend? Want to make a stab at it?
Vanilla?
They should be so like, no.
Cat urine.
Where did that come from?
I just remembered it.
You just remembered cat urine?
Oh, yeah, well, I was just cleaning out his pot before my bed.
Well, I guess we can accept that. Yes, congratulations. I mean, not to Dell, but they apparently smell like, and no one knows what it is. It could be the glue or something they use in there, because I've noticed that glue kind of. Well, you know, this is quite an amazing turnaround here, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
When you think about it.
Yeah.
So should they stop here and just go away?
They could if they wanted to, or they could risk it all for the chance to win the mother load. All they have to do is get one more question right.
Yeah. Now, when you say mother load.
Mm-hmm. So I have this page full of prizes, right?
Yeah.
And if you win, you get kind of half the page of prizes.
Yeah.
But if you go for the mother load and you win the mother load, you get the full page.
Oh, that whole
prizes,
page there?
The
they just win the page or do they win the prize?
The prizes that are written on the page.
And are they worth even winning?
Oh, they're
though?
Fantastic.
I don't know, Brian. There's a lot of type on that page. So should we go
there
for
there
it?
There is, but you should see the stuff we give away. It's really...
We can try.
You're going to go for it? They're going to
go for
it.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, let's encourage them. You got to get this question right. If you get it wrong, you lose everything, and then we're back where we started, like this never happened. Okay, so it's very important. What categories do they have to choose from?
Places, science, or odds and ends.
Places, science, or odds and ends. Is it Brian's turn or yours?
I think it's
my turn.
It is? Okay, Reverend?
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends. This could be anything. Let's see. Are you more honest in the morning, in the afternoon, or every other Tuesday? They have studied this, and there's, I don't know if it's a chemical thing or what, or a Tuesday thing. I have no idea what. Are you more honest, more likely to be honest, in the morning, in the afternoon, or every other Tuesday? Talk it over now, gentlemen.
I would think it would be in the afternoon.
Yeah, that'd be fine. I guess I really don't know. That's something I don't know.
Well, you must deal
every
with this.
Every other Tuesday is kind of weird.
In your occupation, you must have to deal with these kinds of questions.
Well,
moral questions. Never, moral questions.
Moral questions. Yes. Well, I'll have to ask the congregation tomorrow. But
how do you know they're lying, though? You know,
that's right. I don't know. It's not Tuesday or anything.
So you're saying the morning.
I think the morning. Yeah,
I would think before you could even think about lying, you know, they get you in early, probably, then you couldn't even think of a deception. Because I couldn't really deceive myself, personally, I'm saying, till at least noon.
I think Michael's onto something here. I think the morning does sound here.
I think the morning would be...
I'm just saying, just me, if I were playing this quiz.
Oh.
Well, okay.
I think I'll go with the morning.
Morning?
Yep.
Agreed? Morning, yes, morning. You're honest as the day is young. In the morning.
Good job.
Congratulations.
Ben, add grace and utility to your table with a genuine Mississippi pickle fork, an item of repurposed silver from the Screaming Porch Gift Company, and then keep snugly warm in the stands under a red Ole Miss 1848 blanket from the University of Mississippi.
Oh.
Fire up the grill one last time with a bag of Kickapoo John's lump charcoal while wearing a chef's ball cap designed for the ultimate grill meister from the Duluth Trading Company. Pop a refreshing Meshuga Mint, crazy strong, certified kosher, and packed in a reusable tin from the Unemployed Philosophers Guild. And go from a rodeo to a quiet city on the CD What Do You Know About Copeland
with Red-Blooded American liner notes by Michael Feldman on Nimbus Records. Brian, find out what percentage of Americans make an effort to eat vegetables in the cabbage family. In What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Then keep your wine glass clearly identified with the What Do You Know wine charm, custom made by Angie Simonson at Weirdly Wired Jewelry. Burn the clutch out along with Runaway Planet CD No Part of Nothing, and while away the longer fall evenings playing What Do You Know the Party Game, including questions, contestants, answers, and of course, the achingly autumnal Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com.
They both get that?
Something like that.
Yes.
Congratulations to you both.
They both got to get that. Thank you very much, Ben. Nice job. Best of luck to you. Thank you, Rev. We're going to put you on hold for just a second now. Make sure you get that.
Okay.
Thanks very much for playing. Nice talking to you.
There
you go. All right. So I get Lutheran insurance, and I know an Episcopalian really well now.
Great. You're all set. You got it covered.
Life is good. Gentlemen.
You going to do Town of the Week?
I don't know. Do you feel like doing
it? Let's do it.
I mean, I can do Town of the Week. Yeah, let's do Town of the Week.
Town of the Week.
Sure.
Okay, well, each week, hardly never this week ever do we do it at this time, but that time has come right now. A town, village, or burg somewhere in the greater U.S. and a rearranged map of the same. Here is Sarah Nixon, our Town of the Week.
On the western edge of New York State's Finger Lakes, you'll find Geneseo. The river valley was originally a Seneca village where Iroquois people lived and farmed. During the Revolutionary War, the Iroquois people were driven out of the area after siding with the British. Two blue blood brothers from Connecticut moved into the area in 1789 to establish a farming community. The land along the Genesee River is richly fertile, and agriculture is still the engine of the local economy with vineyards, dairies, orchards, and family farms. As the town drew wealth off the land, beautiful 19th century homes went up. Many of them are still standing, and part of the village is now a National Historic Landmark. Huh. In 1821, Geneseo became the seat of Livingston County, and as the community grew, the founding brothers opened the Wadsworth Normal School with 91 students. The original school building is now part of the SUNY Geneseo campus with about 5,000 students. I'm guessing that most of those students don't make it into the census figures, as the population of Geneseo these days is about 8,000. If you're visiting the area, you can catch the Geneseo Knights play, go to the downtown farmers market, swim or boat on Kinesis Lake, or hike through Letchworth State Park, which is known as the Grand Canyon of the East.
What's it called?
Letchworth State Park.
Okay.
Yeah. Have you noticed ever how many of these towns have canyons that are known as the Grand Canyon of somewhere?
Yeah.
It's over and over.
Except the Grand Canyon. They never say that. But.
The National Warplane Museum is also in Geneseo. They're preserving and restoring World War II and Vietnam-era aircraft. And for something a little unusual, there's also a treehouse park you can climb into. Hmm. And that's our Town of the Week, Geneseo, New York.
Oh, how interesting. It sounds idyllic.
Doesn't it?
But they all sound idyllic when you talk about them.
Oh, you're kind. So kind.
Really?
Yeah.
And we've been calling randomly right now, or Lyle has. Oh, I'm sorry to wake you, Lyle. Were you calling randomly? It's something. Alyssa is online with us from Geneseo, New York. Hi, Alyssa.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Did you happen to hear what Sarah said about Geneseo?
I did, and she covered a lot of good stuff about Geneseo.
Yeah. And what now, did she omit something, or is something a little bit not quite accurate?
Well, I didn't know about the treehouse park.
Oh.
That sounds awesome. I didn't know that was here. and I caught the end of it. I didn't know if she happened to mention we're also pretty close to a monastery. The Abbey of the Genesee is located just a few miles from Geneseo, which is a place a lot of people like to visit. It's very beautiful out there, very peaceful.
Sounds nice. Well, monasteries, you know, they can't be raucous.
No, they're not.
They can't be raucous and be a monastery.
Yeah, it's where monk's bread is made. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's
monk's
really
bread.
Popular around here, but they
I have
bake
heard
bread
of that.
There.
Yeah. What is special about monk's bread?
I don't know. It's very delicious. They make all different kinds, and growing up around here, we used to go out there. You could kind of time when you knew the bread would be coming out, so you could get warm loaves of bread.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So you grew up actually in Geneseo?
I did. I grew up right outside of Geneseo in a little tiny town called Cuylerville.
Yeah. Is it as idyllic as it sounds?
It is. It's a very beautiful place. I know that we're kind of known for how beautiful the sunsets are out here. The college students often comment on that. As you look out over the valley, the sunsets are wonderful.
Yeah. Are there a few spots there, or a spot or two at least, that locals know about that, that someone coming through would never know about that we could actually seize upon should we get there?
I don't know. I would have to say it depends upon the time of year.
Yeah.
I mean, you could find out about it through the Conservancy, but I know a big thing with locals is in the springtime, there's fields of bluebells that come up around the Genesee River that are just, they don't even seem real. It's so magical out there, and it only lasts for a week or so.
Yeah.
And that's something I know a lot of locals like to do.
So
the bluebells are a big attraction.
Painters must just be lining the streets then.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of artists in Geneseo. Mm. I know our oak trees inspire a lot of people. There's a lot of art based around those.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now what about some place to get libation or food, or, you know, where locals would go?
Well, there's the Big Tree Inn, which is a Big restaurant tree. And a tavern and also a bed and breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of people like to go. Just outside of town, there's a really nice restaurant called the Yard of Ale that's popular with locals. That's in an old carriage house, I believe.
Yeah. That sounds good. And so you stayed in town after graduating?
I did, yeah. I moved to Ithaca, New York briefly, which is also a nice spot.
Very nice, yeah.
I don't know. It really made me appreciate where I'm from, leaving and then coming back.
Yeah. So you found a job down there and...
Yep, I work at a store called Touch of Grace that's on Main Street, and there's a lot of great shops here, and this is a nice place to work, a lot of old buildings. So.
Yeah, is that true with a lot of the kids who grew up there? They stay in town, or they come back? Or?
I don't know. I don't really know what the percentage would be. There's definitely a lot of people that stick around and, you know, have their families here. So.
Yeah. I think it was just too fast?
I don't know. It was fun, but I guess I'm more of a country girl.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, it's very nice speaking with you, Alyssa, and you've painted a very nice picture of town, and it's a place we'd like to visit. We got a little something for you for being so kind.
We do. We'll be sending you the Pride of America's Dairyland in a scrumptious selection of 10 premium-certified organic cheeses and butters from Lafarge, Wisconsin's Organic Valley family of farms.
Thanks, Alyssa.
All right, thank you.
And our town of the week, Geneseo, New York.
We'll have to have somebody throw the dart at the beginning of next week.
Yeah, we'll do it.
I don't think we have time for darts.
Sure.
Because I have to tell you that if you are planning your next Madison outing, you can bring the whole gang to Monona Terrace for a live What Do You Know broadcast.
Oh, you could, yeah.
Click over to notmuch.com for special group pricing and get your tickets today.
Yeah.
And you can join us next week for another live broadcast of What Do You Know from the beautiful Monona Terrace, featuring a performance by ukulele superstar Jake Shimabukuro. Tickets available at the door or online at notmuch.com.
Thank you all for coming. Special thanks,
PRI,
Nicholas David.
PRI, Public Radio International.